Welcome to this episode of Token of Unappreciation, your only podcast for detailed breakdowns of the George Lopez Show, episode by episode. I am one of your hosts, Kyle. And normally I'm joined by my co-host, Tim, and I always feel terrible because we always schedule this time to break down an episode of the George Lopez Show, but scheduling issues, and we end up doing an interview with a comic creator. I actually had it lined up. Tim's not here today, so we won't be able to talk about the episode of The Lopez Show where the cool girls court Carmen, but not her best friend Toby. Meanwhile, George is tempted to accept a job for another factory, but he's disrespected by the bosses at the current job. We actually have a really good show. I am beyond excited. We're going to be talking to creator, artist, illustrator, Anzu about her work on this new amazing graphic novel, Shadow Life. Thank you. Well, first, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so I think anyone maybe that's listened, we've mentioned like friend of the show, Melissa. She is a PR at, is it Don't Hide PR? And we work with her a lot, and I saw she was like tweeting about this book, and I was like, like, is she doing stuff with it? Because I was like, I adore this book so much. So then I bugged her, and luckily Anne was nice enough to do it. So I appreciate it. And I, like I said, the second I saw that, I was like, oh, I've been like stalking this book since it was announced. I was so excited for this. I know kind of in the history of it, I know Hiromi kind of, she had this done for a bit, and then it was kind of, was one of those projects I think that you kind of came on as an illustrator. How did that come about? Kind of, I know this is like her first work in the graphic novel comic world. So how did it come about with you and first second kind of being linked to this project?
Right. So yeah, I was brought on after Hiromi had brought the script to first second and signed and all of those things. And so I started working on it, I want to say it was 2018, yeah. So how it happened basically was like kind of a weird chain of events where I was tabling at a convention in late 2017, and someone came to my table and like we started talking about one of my comics because he had it at his work desk. And so I was like, oh, where do you work? And he was like, oh, I'm the art director at first second. And I was like, oh, because I had just applied for a job there. I don't remember, was it like, it was some kind of like intern position, I think. But I had just applied for that. And so I was like talking to him about it. And then I followed up an email later just in case, because, you know, like, oh, just to like remind them that I was talking to them about this, maybe, long shot, but you know, I wanted to do that. And then I didn't hear back from him for a few months. But then in the spring, he actually emailed me to say that the position had already been filled, of course, but he had a book that he was looking for an artist for, which was Shadow Life. And so he asked me if I wanted to test for the illustration. And then so I did that and then signed my contract, and then now it is here.
I don't want to speak. I don't know if that's better than an internship, but like
definitely different.
Yeah. Seeing, obviously kind of being familiar with your other work, your shorter comics or the stuff you have online, like this seems almost like kind of like tailor-made to like fit, obviously kind of in your style, but like the stories you seem to enjoy illustrating, and again kind of really like the kind of like slice of life comic, but like seeing you attach, and obviously kind of the serendipity of being working, like it seems like almost like this is like a perfect book for kind of you to come on illustrating.
Yeah, I actually definitely felt like that too when I was first asked about it. You know, like the, like you said, like the kind of slice of life feeling, kind of like the aesthetic of it, even though like obviously there hadn't been any visual for it officially, but I could tell by the way the script was written that it would fit really well with what I liked. And so I'm definitely very fortunate that this was the first major like long form project that I was approached with, because I was still kind of a very new graduate at that point.
Thinking of kind of, again, someone who, you know, is writes poetry and novels and kind of coming into the graphic novel world, we see that obviously a lot, but to kind of have that as a project and then giving it to an illustrator, and it's a book that I think heavily relies on kind of visual storytelling. Like, there's a lot of silence in the book, there's a lot of amazing kind of acting and fluid movement that like move, and like there's pages where there's obviously no text. For you kind of getting that script and working that out, what was, is that kind of a lot of freedom on your point, and then a lot of like really kind of diving it in and almost scripting it out yourself? I know like a lot of your work is just kind of you doing your own comics. Was it a lot of freedom, and then you're just kind of comfortable being able to kind of break it down into how you want to tell it visually?
Yeah, so the script I received from Hiromi was kind of a more like loose sort of screenplay-ish kind of like, I kind of even want to like describe it as like a little bit prose-ish script. Like, there weren't really strict page or panel breakdowns. It was kind of just like Hiromi describing everything like happening in each chapter, and then of course there would be the dialogue and any actions and everything. But apart from that, I pretty much had the freedom to break it down into the comic layout how I wanted, which is definitely nice from a creative standpoint. And of course it is more work than if like the pages had already been broken down ahead of time. So there's like pros and cons to each, but it is actually pretty similar to how I tend to script out my own shorter comic works. So I felt pretty at home in that sense, I think.
Having kind of larger form of the story kind of scripted out for you in a sense with kind of this story. But then, like I said, I think what sells a lot of it, and obviously the whole thing's amazing on every level, but I think kind of your ability to give life and definitely a lot of attention to Kumiko, like in the realm of just like you instantly fall in love with this character. I think a lot of that is obviously kind of through your visual storytelling. I imagine, is that kind of then just the bigger beats of the chapters, and then does that, I would imagine at that point it would be easier to kind of tell those little moments if someone's not saying, like, if you're working with a writer who's like, you know, panel one, I want this to happen, panel two, I want this to happen, panel three, I want this.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. Like, I've worked with scripts like that that are more strict at, I have another book called Measuring Up, which is for middle grade readers. And so that script was more formal like that. And I didn't dislike working with that script either by any means. You know, it's nice also to have kind of that pre-work done for me so that I can kind of just focus on like the art itself. But I do definitely appreciate like the freedom to like choose where those like long drawn out or like very important story beats are happening on the page. I think it's really nice to be able to decide that. And so what I kind of did with the script while I was making the layout was I was kind of just like forming it around those like important moments. Like, say I want like this, you know, very impactful scene to take like a whole page, or like it's like a page turn or something like that, then I can like designate that for that, and then kind of the little moments like the talking heads and whatever, they fall in between those pages.
It kind of in that realm, I think when one of the things I love about your work, and especially in Shadow Life, is the ability, I think a lot of great creators have this, to kind of weave in and out of, I think, more of the, you know, quote-unquote realistic panel layouts versus then kind of the illustrative, for lack of a better term, I guess, like cartoon aspects of it. And kind of your ability to do that, I think, obviously heightens a lot of the humor in the book. Is that something, again, something easy for you to work in, like, kind of know that balance? And is that something kind of where, like, editors at first second now, and then obviously kind of bouncing it off the writer, what kind of works in the balance of when you're kind of stepping out into the more, like, stripped down cartoon aspect versus kind of the more, like, detailed, like, internal shot? I know there's a couple of, like, establishing shots of her apartment were very detailed aspects of the book.
I think it's definitely a learning process, kind of balancing those like more realistic layouts with the more cartoony ones and things like that. I think I'm naturally more predisposed to gravitating to like a very realistic, kind of more formal comic layout. So I tried to remind myself to that I can also use, cartoonish lines or borders or things like that, if that serves the purpose of the scene. I'm thinking mainly of an early scene in the book where Kumiko is coming out of the pool after a nighttime swim, and she's imagining herself turning into a seal and then turning into a cork floating in the water. And so, I knew looking at the script, this is kind of a weird thing to include if it has very like rigid square borders or something. It's harder to convey that imaginative aspect, so I tried to kind of keep the lines loose and like let the ooh, sorry about that. Those are sirens. that happens frequently here, but yeah, I definitely tried to remind myself like I can use these looser lines and looser styles, and that actually helps the page rather than it's just like a decorative choice or something.
I think is that's kind of compared to your other stuff, but I think I noticed heavily in this, like, a lot of it is, you have kind of like thicker, I guess, borders on your panels when they're more structured and kind of, again, in the more, not even realistic scenes, but kind of the more straightforward scenes. And anytime you need to do something for effectiveness, like the cork scene, or I'm thinking of, like, later when even kind of meets up with Death Shadow and everything like that, like, then you kind of have the ability to break out of that, and it adds like a dynamic feel to it, because I think you spent so long of the book in those kind of really, like, thicker, like, panels, and I think it works to the advantage of, again, when you need to kind of really break out of that, you have that, and it's really effective when those moments happen.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely also tried to kind of like channel sort of inspiration from manga that I feel like takes more liberties with page layout sometimes and to really good effect. So definitely trying to keep that kind of spontaneous feeling in scenes as needed.
Yeah, that was so nice to kind of reread this. So I don't know, maybe I don't know why, but in the past month I've been like a huge, like, manga kick. I just felt like I was like, I need to go into it. So reading that, and then I had to, like, go read some more, obviously, like, you know, mainstream Western comics recently for some interviews and some reviews. And, like, it's so obviously so different. And this, like, again, kind of merges the two beautifully. Again, I love the ability to kind of pull out and break things down into their most simple form to really convey emotion. And there's one panel, I know it's not even that, but where she throws the salt and hits the, I think, the guy at the library, or the woman at the library. Oh, like, that's hysterical. And, like, you're able to kind of break it down into very simple shapes and faces, and it just heightens, and it works so well, I think.
Thank you.
This is a book, if anyone is listening, hopefully, again, I'm gonna be talking about it, but focuses on the 78-year-old woman who's escaped from this senior living nursing home facility. And obviously, she's really the star of the book, and it centers around her. For you, was it to kind of capture her? There's a lot of scenes in the book where she's naked, she is exposed, she's really, like, I mean, exposed in really, like, kind of emotional way a lot of times. But there's like humor weaved in. Was there to kind of, again, toe that line where you're not like, there's at no point is there like humor expounded on because she's like an old like chunky lady like it's a lot of like really kind of towing that line and like that is a did not difficult as a illustrator, but is that something like kind of being able to approach that and kind of again really sell the humanity of this character who is really like again buying into her struggle is what sells the book.
Yeah, I think that definitely was also like a pretty big learning point for me, illustrating an older woman, illustrating a fat woman, things like that, and making sure that I'm portraying this character, like in the way that she would look, I guess. Because, when you're in art school or you're learning how to draw or things like that, people typically draw, like younger, like thin. A lot of people draw, conventionally attractive people and things like that, which is fine, of course, but definitely as an artist, it's important to learn how to draw all kinds of features, body types, ages, things like that. And so, yeah, I really also appreciate Hiromi definitely gave me some advice in the character designing process, things like her notes on what Kumiko's figure would look like, her proportion, I remember a keynote was that her torso should be longer, more so, and her legs would be shorter rather than, for her as an Asian woman, as opposed to kind of a more Eurocentric, shorter torso, longer legs figure. And so thinking of like all of these things was really important for working on the book. And I also appreciate that you brought up her being, old or larger or whatever. Like that is never really like the butt of the joke. She just is in like funny, weird situations sometimes. And she has a good sense of humor, and she's a strange lady, and I think it's really great.
Yeah, again, like I love that. Some of the most, again, kind of like dynamic and plot moving parts of the book are in those scenes where she may be like naked. I think of the like first real confrontation with Death Shadow is her again being very vulnerable in the tub, and again all the like other humor scenes are again detached from that, which is again kind of great in selling that. Is that also I'm trying to think of other things you've done maybe, but in this very kind of character-driven book, but this scene actually has, or not scene, this book has a lot of like action-driven moments. And again, I think like if you told me a 7-year-old lady like fighting a shadow with a vacuum was like one of the most like exciting like scenes of comics of the year I read, like I'd be like okay, but like it is, it's really great. Adjusting to kind of that, breaking out and doing kind of a little more dynamic stuff, was that something you were comfortable with and like tracking where people would be like what how to make it dynamic in the sense of like again not, it's just not people talking to each other.
Yeah, I definitely think, like, even now, drawing action or whatever, it's not really my strength, so it's something I really had to, like, consciously focus on and make sure that things are looking right, because definitely, like, if I was just left alone to draw whatever I want, it would be like very like slice of life. Not much happens, but there's like some nice, like pretty scenes going on or something, which I still like, of course, but definitely I had to kind of like expand my range of skills while I was working on this. And I think I've gotten better since I started for sure, but definitely still something that I wouldn't say I'm like particularly well experienced in drawing action and things like that.
I think you, again, to kind of have an action scene where, again, it's this, like, little adorable, like, chunky old lady fighting this, like, for the book and kind of the way everyone else is designed, fairly like intimidating and scary. Death Shadow, like you hit like really cool moments, like when she finally captures him in the vacuum. You have like the twist off panel, like almost like I mean it's not, but like you think of like someone like cocking a gun. Like it's a very dynamic and like action filled scene. Like it's, I think again it works very well in kind of, you know, adjusting what would be a more goofy scene into a generally like fun scene to like live out.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't remember which interview. I read one where she talked about, like, someone asked, like, the approach to the book being in black and white, and I read that, like, there was a discussion of color at some point. But I can't, like, obviously, like, that would be interesting, and I think of, I think Grave Cleaning. You did the color on that is like, oh my god, so beautiful. But like the black and white and gray shading of this book is fantastic, and I'm like trying to think of how it would work with color because I think it's so dynamic. Was that something, again, being comfortable in, I think you do a great service of playing with shadow, playing with light in this, and even one of the most beautiful things you do in the book is water, using water as like this element and being able to kind of portray it in a black and white comic, and the way you do it is fantastic. Again, the fight scene where she gets pulled underwater is great. Was comfortable in the black and white, and was that something, again, able to play with storytelling more with that aspect?
Yeah, there are definitely pros and cons to having something in black and white versus color. Personally, like, especially for Shadow Life, I definitely strongly lean toward black and white because it just matches the aesthetic of the book very well. You know, it's called Shadow Life, so having that really stark shadow to play off of in black and white is great, I think. But yeah, for sure, like, you know, it has limitations too, right? Like, I can't really like fully render like some blue iridescent water or something like that. Like, it can't look like that in black and white. So I had to kind of learn how to do those things in, you know, just two, or, you know, I had gray in there, but pretty much just like two or three shades on the page. I appreciate that you brought up the color in Grave Cleaning. I do think it turned out well, but I actually had so much grief trying to color that comic because when I was doing that, I had realized I had never, ever done a full color comic page for anything before. And I was just like, oh my god, I don't know what to do. Like, nothing looks right. It was very like grief laden process, but I do think it came out all right in the end.
With doing colors and then having one where there you tackle and again I think pull off so many different layers of like shadows and light in that, like that seems difficult, but again I think it looks fantastic.
Yeah, I think part of it, like part of my grief with that process was definitely like, you know, in the middle of finishing something, it just looks really bad. Like, it looks nice when you have the lines done. It looks nice when you have all of the colors and shading done. But those steps in between, I just doubt everything, you know? So, yeah, full color is definitely not something that comes super naturally to me. But it is something I'm trying to learn how to do better, I think. More consistently.
I do think, again, kind of where color can be used to, like, as a, I don't want to say as a crutch, but also kind of as a, and something to add depth. Because I think one of the things, and I see this with a lot of comics, is you play with and you use, like, a lot of empty space. And like you mentioned, there's grays in here and there's tones for shading, but it's not a lot. It's used effectively when it's needed, but like you, and I think a lot of people would be nervous about this or would want to fill the page with a lot of things, especially in black and white, but like you really kind of if you don't need it on the panel, like, you don't use it. And then, so there's a lot of times where it is just maybe like a head in a panel, and it really is effective when you do that. And again, I think it's something like I know, even not as like an illustrator of any point, like when I'm drawing stuff, like I think it's natural to be like, I gotta add more to the looks, but like to be comfortable and confident that like a facial expression can sell a panel, like it can. And like I think you do that in this, especially where the book is black and white and there's a lot of space a lot of times.
I think for me there are like two parts to something like that, which is, one, I feel like especially when you're limited to a monochromatic palette, the balance of the values is so important. You know, sometimes you could add too many different gray tones and it looks very, it's hard to discern kind of where you're supposed to go, where your eye is supposed to go. And so in a comic, that's so important, right? So I definitely tried to make sure I could strike that visual balance, that things don't look empty, but it's not hard to move through the page. And then the other part, of course, is just, you know, trying not to cram too many unnecessary things into a comic because it would take too long. Of course, this is like the more practical part of that, but yeah.
I know you mentioned measuring up, which I don't know how I missed, but I only recently found out about it, and I'm really excited to track down. Having kids, I have what is it, 7, 5, and then what is he now, 9-month-old or something, but anyway, like, I've always enjoyed, but I've, like, absolutely fallen in love with, like, young adult and kids graphic novels. Mm-hmm. Again, I think, that market is huge now, but also, I think that's the medium we're seeing kind of the most unique and dynamic storytelling and people taking chances. I know, like, people like HarperCollins or Scholastic and even First, Second, which kind of, like, is a huge part in that market, is, like, they're really taking chances with books and really kind of creator-driven books. That was a long thing to say. I'm really excited to grab that and read it. But this is kind of your first long form, and I don't know how long measuring up is, but how was that kind of, especially coming from a lot of like the mini comic world, how was that kind of then going into an almost, what is it, 200-something? It's almost 300 pages, right? Or it's over?
Shadow Life is about 360, and Measuring Up is about 205, I want to say.
So how is it tackling something that large versus kind of the previous stuff you had done?
It was definitely difficult, I think. I think this is a common sentiment with a lot of first-time graphic novel cartoonists, but I made so many mistakes during the process, which, you know, now coming after that whole experience, you know, I have things that I know for the future, like how to streamline my process better, you know, kind of trying to do things more efficiently. So then, yeah, that's one part of it. I was definitely a little bit intimidated, you know, coming from mini comics, shorter form work. Actually, something I was trying to actively push myself for in my last year of school was, we have our senior thesis projects, right? So I had one for my fall semester and one for my spring semester. And so my thought was that I would try to make like a progressively longer comic each time and kind of try to build myself up to telling a longer story. So, because, you know, before that I had really only done like 4 to 16 page comics or something like that. So I tried to go from like a 28 page comic to 40 page comic. And so I guess that kind of helped like dip my toes in the water, so to speak. But definitely even from that to what became over 300 pages is a pretty large gap, and it's not easy. But I think that it did give me a lot of learning experience for even like how the process of a graphic novel should smoothly go. And yeah, very glad for that.
Were you working on like a page count, or did they want you kind of in a rough ballpark for it, or is it like kind of outlining where they wanted you?
Yeah, the rough page count that they estimated was actually much, much lower. It was like between 200 to 220 pages, which I did not stick in that range, obviously. Like, part of it is I felt like the content in the script definitely would necessitate it to be longer. And then the second part to that is I don't like to cram too many things into a single page. If I can, I would rather let things breathe a little bit more, even if that means more pages. So that was kind of how that happened.
That is, it's interesting. I imagine it's not something I could bug editors to. But, like, I would wonder, like, again, kind of coming from something that is written as a script and, like, how you would, like, ballpark that. Because, like, reading this, like, it feels like a tight 300. Like, I can't imagine cutting anything down. A lot of that is, like, you know, again, there's so much, like, kind of pleasant downtime in this book. And it's all relevant. It's all about character building, but there's like so many moments where you just like need to breathe. Like there's the shot of her, like almost like a full page of her just like swimming in the pool. Like it's so, you get so much about her just in that. Like I would imagine, like again, you can't, I would be interested to see how like someone goes about ballparking what you would decide as a script. But
yeah there are, you know, like small things here and there in the script that I cut out. Like It would not be, like, something really big. It would be, like, Kumiko shakes her head or something like that. There would be a few instances of that, so I would think, like, okay, well, this isn't fully necessary because it's kind of already communicated by the art that's in this panel and by her dialogue here. So I'll, you know, cut an action like that out. But I did try to keep pretty much everything that I felt was integral to the script in there. And like you mentioned, the things like the panel with her swimming, it's definitely not something that I would ever want to cut down so much just because I'm trying to fit into an arbitrary page count. So, yeah, I'm glad that they were open to increasing the page count for the book, especially since it wasn't in their plan.
For this specifically, and then I know kind of a lot of your other work is, again, we talked about kind of been in the, I hate keep saying it, but I don't know, genre, it's kind of broad in the slice of life, but kind of biography, autobiography, nonfiction world of comics. For you as a creator in your own work, but also like kind of the stuff you've taken on as an illustrator, why do you think that kind of works so well in comics, and then also something kind of you yourself have kind of gravitated to and kind of where you have worked in your kind of creative space?
Yeah, I do have a lot of autobiographical work in my past comics for sure. I mean, I think comics are just a really great storytelling medium for pretty much mostly anything, because you can kind of direct all the quote-unquote shots yourself. You have control over how it's written, how it's drawn, and everything. Even like things like format, you can play with that. Like I have my double-sided comic that plays with that, or, you know, people will do their web comics that scroll down, and all these different things that you can play with in terms of how the story is presented. Yeah, I definitely gravitate towards autobio work in my own stuff, because, I don't know, it's, to me, it feels a little bit easier than trying to come up with a fictional story. You know, I already know how the story goes. It happened, so I can take that, and then I can frame it to be visually interesting, you know? Like, I was talking to some friends a while ago because Hourly Comic Day was in February, I think, you know, when you draw a little autobio comic every hour that you're up that day. And then one of them was like, oh, why does your day look so magical or something like that? And it's like, it's really not. Like, I don't know. I think it was like a pretty nice day, but it's not, it's like nothing crazy. I just framed the comic panels in such a way that it can look like that.
I think, like you said, I'm looking at one that had kind of stuck out with me and I've always liked is Spring Break.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, that's something where, again, so, something as, again, for lack of a better term, mundane as, you know, riding a bus to visit someone, you can add that visual storytelling and kind of dynamic fantasy aspect to it of the way you frame the shots, and also something you do in Shadow Life and you've done in a few other things, which I think comics has struggled with adapting, and I think film especially, and I don't know how it ever really works in film, is the use of social media and technology and really being able to adapt. And I think comics, you can do that fairly well because you have the way of kind of overlays and stuff and working with like text bubbles, and it's difficult with film. But like in, you know, Shadow Life, there's the use of the emails, and then like something like Spring Break with the text. And I think there's another one of your books where it's like specifically through text.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's, you have such a, it's like the merging of prose, which you can play with people's imagination, but then film where you kind of have control over the pacing and sound, and like comics is able to kind of, you know, merge those two. There's just limitations there, but like it kind of plays with the best of both worlds. Jesus.
Yeah, stuff like social media, actually that's something that I started thinking about a lot in I want to say it was my maybe it was my senior year. It was in college. But I had a teacher who is also a cartoonist, actually. His name is Jeremy Cerise, but something that he kind of imparted onto me was like, how do you include texts and things like that in a comic without it just being like a panel of the screen? And ever since then, I, you know, want to consciously include like texts and emails and things like that in a way where it doesn't feel too boring. Like, it doesn't have to be a crazy layout or something, but because a lot of these messages are contained in their own squares and balloons already, there's not really a need to put that into yet another frame most of the time. So yeah, I try to remember that for including those things.
Well, especially I think with kind of the generation that's coming up, like social media and technology, like the way it is presented to us is in a very like comic almost format. Like, it means something, even something as silly as like emojis or you know, GIFs, or the way like you use text and memes, like that is like literally like breaking down, I mean, memes are just like breaking down an emotion into an image with text. Like, it is very like comic and visually storytelling based, like kind of the way we've moved to communicating, I think, in a lot of aspects.
Yeah, I think that's true for sure.
What's, having done this like book now and then again kind of the stuff, like what is like kind of the goal going forward for you for books? Kind of, again, like I think it's so interesting where, again, working in the smaller like indie comic, which like I love, but then tackling something like this beautiful big book, like what is kind of like your goal like in the world of comics?
I'm honestly not super sure. I think when I was in college, I had like a very nebulous goal of like, I want to make a graphic novel. And so, like, I've done that now in terms of the art. I have not written a graphic novel myself. But back then I was like, well, you know, this is like the thing people do. So yeah, like, I would like to do that. But now I'm not super sure. I do definitely want to continue with making mini comics and things like that. Like, comics that are for my own satisfaction and not really for anything else. That for one. Yeah, I mean, in terms of other projects going forward, I mean, right now I'm working on another middle grade book, which is also by the same author as Measuring Up, actually. And so I'm kind of in the early-ish stages of that. Hiromi and I have talked about working together again. That's still in the very, very early stages, but I'm excited for that if it does happen, so.
I forgot, I just, and I was like, I make all these notes and then I, like, I'm consciously trying not to click around all the time. Just before, like, ask you, this is something too, I think, works specifically well in the book, but were you lettering this whole thing as well? Was it hand lettered or were you lettering it digitally for this?
So it was a font that I made of my handwriting.
Okay.
I knew for sure that I did not want to hand letter it because I do like the aesthetic of hand lettering a lot, but I am the kind of person who I will start writing and then, like, the line will start slanting downward. And even in my mini comics, like, adjusting the lettering and doing all those things very meticulously takes a really long time. So that was one thing I knew for sure, that I wanted to use a font. So yeah, I ended up with my hand-lettered font, basically.
I was gonna, like, when we were talking about the page count, that was where I remembered, like, mm-hmm. Oh shit, I was trying to remember if she, because you can tell, obviously, the sound effects, you lettering, but I was like,
she's
crazy if she lettered.
No.
This whole book. And like you said, I was like, this looks beautiful. You can tell, obviously, it is in your style, but
but some people do hand letter their own, like, big graphic novels, and, like, it does look nice, I think. And for someone who can letter very cleanly and not fuss with it too much after, I think it's a great choice, but I am just not that kind of person.
When I am in high school and my teacher's making me take essay tests on the computer because she can't read my handwriting, not lettering your own books. As you've kind of, a lot of your stuff, like, I mean, even like, was it Sleep Train was like your thesis, right?
That was my fall senior thesis.
Like, coming out with obviously amazing work out of the gates, and the way you've kind of progressed and tackling these bigger things, have you seen, or as you've worked longer in this kind of medium, have you kind of adapted or continued to evolve what you feel like is your style? I feel like you're very, at least looking through a lot of your work, there's obviously kind of a clear line of where you are, but I feel like you take a lot of chances and stuff, especially even the way, like even again looking at Spring Break, where, like, very, you're able to see kind of heavy line work, and then even in something like Shadow Life, you can clearly see the way you're drawing the panels. Like, you have some kind of, like, overextending lines, like, those are all hand-drawn panels. Have you feel like you've gotten evolved, or, like, is there a way, place you're going, you feel like you want to get with your art?
Yeah, I think, I mean, my style has definitely evolved over the years, I think. I've kind of had, like, phases where I was really interested in, like, using a certain medium or, like, doing things a certain way. Like, I was very into using pencil for a while, so I had a few comics that I did in that because I was like convinced like I can never use ink again. It's too messy. I get it everywhere. And then of course like I come back to using ink because, you know, I found a way to use it that works with me, which is I just use a fountain pen and like don't deal with any like nibs or brushes or anything. It just does not work with a messier person like me. But yeah, I think what I see for my style, so to speak, going forward, I guess it's like kind of like what I've used in Shadow Life, but I want to keep refining it, I guess, and letting it go from there as I improve my craft or get interested in different things like that. What I found is that I kind of have like sort of two modes that I work in, which is, you know, like one for more children, middle grade geared work, like measuring up, which, you know, I do in the same medium on the same paper and things like that, but I just kind of change the cartooning style a little bit to reflect, you know, something more cartoony and that kids are interested in, you know, something that is like more appropriate for that genre. And then for Shadow Life, it takes a little bit of a more realistic tack, while having like looser lines and things like that. But I feel like they are both kind of under the same umbrella for me.
Yeah, I think there's, and the people who kind of, I think, can do the two well is, there's like you said, there's a very nuanced approach to it. And a lot of times, again, reading a lot of it now and reading a lot of it with my son, like kids is often, I think, more stripped down and more about the kind of exaggerated emotion and kind of the like more exaggerated expressions and flailing and stuff, like, and then something like Shadow Life where you a lot of times are taking that, like, I think why Shadow Life works so well is, again, the expressions you have Kumiko, like, you really like believe these characters and they're the way they're emoting, and it's just like kind of the small nuances. I think you have to like take it up a level for kids, but again, I think the good comics are the ones that aren't really, you know, they're not doing it overtly to kids, if that makes sense. Like, I think the nice thing about middle grade and young adult comics nowadays is they're treating kids smarter and tackling more adult geared stories. Maybe not adult, but more mature stories in a kid format.
Yeah, for sure.
So normally for a last question, Tim will ask this really dumb question. He's not here. He will normally ask if you could write one episode of Two and a Half Men, what would it be about? But we're going to skip that. And because of the content of Shadow Life, and if you could write one episode of The Golden Girls, what would happen?
This is where I have to confess that I've never seen Two and a Half Men or The Golden Girls, because I'm very bad at being aware of TV and films and things like that.
So I don't know. I think between me and Tim, we've probably seen like three episodes of Two and a Half Men. We used to ask, like, Big Bang Theory, because that is like the comic... the bane of most comic people's existence. But yeah, I don't even, I grew up watching Golden Girls, but I still like just face and names,
yeah,
know, old people.
I know about it like very tangentially, you know, like I know kind of what they look like. I've seen like memes of them. I know someone who like did illustrations for the brand. I don't know anything else except that, unfortunately.
I feel like Kumiko could easily, She could get in, make her way in with her love life, get in. I think they were an old people facility. And I will say, and this is again kind of why I think this story is not only amazing, as a kind of like wrap up why I think this book's so great. I've talked about it before on the show, but part of my normal 9-to-5 job, because comic book podcasts don't pay anything, is I work within a department of the Department of Health in New York State, and half of my job was for a long time transitioning people out of nursing homes back into the community with their families, because you know it's a proven statistical fact that people do better and live longer at home in an environment where they're happy and have control of their lives versus, you know, a closed off facility where they're often mistreated, stuff like that. And obviously, like, a big point of this story is that, really, Kumiko taking control of her life and stuff like that, which, again, I think is a fantastic book. I think, again, to have a book that's focused on an older lady, an older Asian Canadian lady, is a fantastic. And if anything, picking up the book because of Anne's amazing, beautiful artwork is worth it. If anyone wanted to know more about you or your work, what would be the best way they could do that?
My website is at aniixu.com. That's aniixu.com. You can find me on social media under Epershand, which is spelled Epershand. I think that's pretty much it.
And I will say, I'm going to try, we're recording this, I don't even know, oh, today's May 4th, obviously, my kids were bugging me, it's Star Wars Day, but I am going to work to get up this episode before, so if you're listening to this within kind of the first couple of days it out, I know, and for your online shop, I think it's till the 16th, if you order stuff, doing, is half you're donating half of it?
Yeah, half of the profit from my online shop will be split between my local mutual aid groups. I am in Baltimore, so I'll be going to Baltimore-based groups. But yeah, I'm selling prints and some of my comp copies of Shadow Life and Measuring Up.
Yes, so that would be not only a good way to support people, but also support Ian. And I have just been just trying to decide all day which version of the princess print I want. I don't know if I'm supposed to like the misregistered ones, but I think they're fucking...
Yeah, it's like, it's kind of trippy because it looks a little bit blurry, but blurry, I can't really, like, I don't know. I like that too. They're both good, I think.
Yeah. So maybe I justify just ordering both. But biggest thing, obviously, you go out and support Anne, but go pick up Shadow Life. If for some reason you've listened to this whole thing, you haven't already read it. But like I said, it's fantastic. I was very excited enough that I had to bug Melissa probably more than she wanted about getting someone to talk to. So again, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you so much. I really liked having this talk on the podcast.
And again, that's this episode. Next time Tim will be back, and I'm sure we'll be back talking about George Lopez when he's here.